This slideshow was organized to augment your understanding of the works on display. We want you to discover the spirit of American drawing. Our selections were not directed to a specific audience. The exhibition is designed to appeal to all kinds of people. You, yes, you are invited to look. Most certainly, we did not structure this show to ballyhoo a feminist statement. In searching out the finest examples of early American drawing and their European sources, we discovered, just incidentally, that the majority of works we had chosen were created by women. A simple statement, then, is in order regarding the female role in art. Here you see a simulated grouping of three Renaissance women whom Vasari included in his biography of Lives of the Artists: Alessandra, Rosanna, and Della Della Robbia. Now you wonder, if they're women, what is that on their faces? Well, it just shows you what an excruciatingly tough time that women had. They literally painted mustaches on their faces and cut their long flowing tresses to an acceptable male length. They had a remarkably difficult time searching out apprenticeships, patrons, and commissions. Della's bitter expression reflects the loss of dignity she suffered from excessive pantaloon pinching as Cimabue's apprentice. Of course, they never married. They were devoted to their careers, and we finally recognize them today, only 500 years later. These still life objects are the impetus for a major portion of the exhibition. You will discover the link between historical European painting and the relevance of this subject matter to even the earliest Americans, the Pilgrims. God bless them, every one. Early American drawing was greatly influenced by Hieronymus Bosch. Note the little nude figure with the raspberry head desperately clinging to the handle of the pitcher. Such eroticisms were a favorite of Bosch and secretly enjoyed as well by some of our noble ancestors. This is the original, now on display at the Fogg Museum. You'll notice the figure is missing from the handle. It was removed during our Victorian purge of sex and gently replaced with a more sedate appendage. Now, only the drawing provides a record of the truth. At the base of the cup, there appears to be a thumbprint pattern. However, we know that this particular craftsperson was ambidextrous, a colonial term meaning both right and left footed, and so the large indentation at the bottom was made by pressing the big toes simultaneously. A detail of the image to the left of the Bosch cup, we can see some very tasty sweets placed on a lace doily, but look closely at how the icing on the left cake spells out Hieronymus and makes a clever transition to a little looped pattern. Surely our primitive artist had no idea that this loop, adopted from Bosch, would become a significant part of the American economy. I believe that today we can truly credit Hieronymus Bosch with the development of the hostess cupcake. Let us salute the remarkable influence Bosch has had upon the American bakery industry and marvel at the loop symbol which has been carried through American art as well as American life. Who among us is not familiar with the name Louis Tiffany? It's a name we all know today for exquisite colored glass. This piece, however, was not made by Tiffany. Certainly, he used organic undulating forms, and this decanter does undulate, but it is a fraudulent copy of a European import from the Venetian studio of Luigi Tiffinetti, a distant cousin of Louis Tiffany, several times removed. Here again is the loop pattern. Surely you're beginning to discern its meaning now. I'm sorry, these are for my next lecture on Dolly Madison's discreet affair with a certain Persian Shah. Don't be deceived into thinking that this is just a pinwheel. It was first used by Columbus as a communication system between the Pinta, Nina, and Santa Maria. Letters were written on each flap, and in series, entire messages could be spelled out in the wind. These same pinwheels were used to teach spelling to youngsters during the Mayflower Crossing. In the midst of the Industrial Revolution, however, they were retired to the status of toys. The stuffed pig is a well-known attribute of early still life, along with feathered chickens and leg of lamb. This pig is tied very tightly. Notice how taut that string is, how very tightly bound. Artists are very sensitive people, extremely sensitive. The legs have been wrapped with a soft green cloth so that the bindings will not be so painful before the pig passes out. A lovely courtesy. And there on the rump is that loop again. This next group of slides is an adoration of the grape. Neither corn nor pumpkins were the first harvest. The pilgrims' dedication to the cultural life of the pub prompted them to first plant grapes. Here, the 18th century artist has interpreted the importance of the grape by isolating it and emphasizing its solidarity. We are accustomed to seeing clusters of grapes, but the loneliness of this little grape grasps our attention. Note the expansive environment, a devotional field. Again, the loop pattern at the edge of the stark white napkin. Now, the napkin demonstrates a cultural elegance. The American sense of abundance has always been a prevalent issue, and if one was to leave just that last little bite, one was thought to have real class. So here you see the lovely loop napkin placed at the side of the plate of grape, an exquisite drawing. Now be flexible. One needs to be very flexible to look at art today. This is a contemporary abstraction of all the images we've just seen. Spend some time with it, and you'll find every symbol we've discussed, especially that loop. This little box was developed by Leonardo during the Renaissance. Yes, it does look like something that was manufactured today. Good design never grows old. Da Vinci initially adapted the box fittings to hold a wheel-like cage at the rear. We know that he placed a hamster in the cage, and in trying to find its way out, the little animal powered a metal cone that sharpened the pencil. Actually, the first society for the preservation of wild animals originated with Da Vinci's work in training a herd of hamsters as studio assistants. If models of D2 or Bionic Woman can't interest our children today, well then, there's always television. Early American children were much more innovative. Notice, in a pair of oval frames, two youngsters at play. The young lady is playing blind man's buff with her dog. She was an only child and had no one in the house with her. The boy, however, didn't even have a dog, poor thing, and so he's simply balancing a nut on his head. It's amazing how long a child could manage to participate, to play with that whole concept. Boy balancing nut on head might have lasted 2 or 3 hours, certainly not like our TV-oriented children today. Here you see the letters FIDO, which are an abbreviated form of another word. This spelling is abstracted from the Latin fido, FIDEAUX. The name Fido was not originated for a dog. The settlers were more practical. They brought horses instead, and we can ascertain that the first American horse was indeed named Fido. This custom ended in the 18th century, and it is now possible to document the long lineage of our current pets with these heroic ancestral portraits. Fido, Fidas, Fida, Fidamos, Fidais, Fidan. Now, this is the family of the first American lady. That head in the large figure looks suspiciously like George Washington, but I suppose that this is an image of George Washington's mother. It is unusual for a man to look so much like his mother. Notice the quantity of apparel this lady is wearing. We feel it reflects the modesty and morals of her time, incongruous, however, with a highly concealed fact that she operated the first nudist camp in the colonies. The small, whimsical figure is Cousin Prudence, disguising her old maid status. Below is Cousin Sammy Fuller, the first business scion. He was president of Mayflower Moving and Fuller Brush. In this same drawing is George's wife with her tapestry bag. The tapestry purse was very popular during the Revolutionary period and handed down from generation to generation. Hence the phrase, that old bag. A detailed view of the first American male. The warm pinks at the tip of the nose indicate that this fellow tippled excessively. Did you see the open loop on the ruffled collar? These images comprise an industrial statement. This fellow means business, so here we have a view of the shipping dock. His wife Desire is still recovering from the vapors and not yet up to snuff. Note her small chest. Broad measurements were not dignified in colonial times. In the lower right, we see evidence of the first American camera. Of course, there was no film. The camera merely designated a rectangular shape that the viewer might remember and describe to friends. Included in the exhibition are two examples of how to do antique framing, just ideas and fragments. This section is a bit of ancient advertising. It suggests that Mama's pasta was served at the Last Supper. I feel that we are closer to art produced today. It's not always so academic. Perhaps this body of work suits us best. It most certainly does fit us better. With all this knowledge under your belt, you can make your own aesthetic judgments. As a discriminating patron of the visual arts, you are aware of both good design and of bad design, and you now know that there is not a simple way to package or box art. This program has been a visual legacy, a graphic history derived from our rich heritage. Those suffering folk who struggled with the savage elements of survival to place before us living images of truth. Let us not betray their confidence. Let us not let them down. One nation, under art, with liberty and justice for all.